program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Peaceworks, presenting the second annual Gala Mardi Gras benefit, Saturday, February 25th, 6 p.m. at the Grand Ballroom in downtown Salem, featuring music by Kate Sullivan and Company, Voodoo Mountain Zydeco, and Zydeco Dance Lesson by Deborah Seek, plus the political satire of Dr. Atomic's Medicine Show, with New Orleans-style food included, auction with unusual items, and no-host bar. Tickets at 503-585-2767 or OregonPeaceWorks.org.
Hi, this is Carlos Chavez, host of a new pilot radio program called Chicanismo. It is a program that focuses on the unique culture of the Mexican from or in or born and raised in the United States. Some say that we have one foot in Mexico, the other foot in America, but both feet in neither. I want to jump right into the interview that we have with Ramon Ramirez. We're going to be talking about a few things. Is he on the line now?
Yes.
Oh, hey, Ramon. I want to start off by talking about the immigration legislation that's pending. Can you talk about that a little bit?
First of all, Carlos, thank you for having me on your program this morning. I really appreciate the opportunity. The bill that we're talking about is the Sensenbrenner bill that passed the House of Representatives in December. It is one of the most mean-spirited bills in the history of the United States. And what it tends to do is it criminalizes immigrants and people associated with immigrants, particularly those who are undocumented. For example, if you're a pastor of a church or you're a union leader, you can be subject to criminal penalties because you are knowingly and willingly associated with undocumented people. And so that is just a horrible piece of legislation. In addition to that, it has some civil liberties provisions in there that I think all Americans, whether you're immigrant or whether you're U.S. born, should be concerned with, and that is the complete violation of due process. So that if you're an undocumented worker, for example, and you're apprehended by the immigration officials in the interior, meaning any part of the country outside the 60 miles of the U.S., Mexico or Canadian border, then you're subject to immediate deportation without due process of law. Now, this sounds like fascism to me. And I think that all Americans should be concerned with those types of laws, that are being passed. And it's easy to pass these laws in this kind of environment, this anti-immigrant environment, where, you know, it's a lot easier because, you know, they sort of mask it under the,
under terrorism, the whole issue of
homeland security and terrorism. Yeah. So, you know, but when you start, analyzing, the Sensenbrenner bill, it is really an attack on all, Americans and, whether you're undocumented or whether you're born in the U.S.
Well, just so people know, I forgot to introduce you before I got you on. This is Ramon Ramirez. He is the president of PICUN, an organization here in the Northwest fighting for immigrant rights. There's also Bush is also talking about a program, a guest worker program. Some are calling it the new Bracero program. What do you think that is an accurate title for that?
Yeah, I do. I think what the president is proposing is the reintroduction of the old Bracero program, where we'll see the introduction of contract labor into the United States. Now, you know, for those that don't know, we already have existing guest worker programs in the country for agricultural workers and for non-agricultural workers. For the agricultural workers, for example, it's called the H-2A provisions of the immigration law, and employers who can document and can prove that there's a shortage of the local workforce can apply, you know, to obtain or get contract labor. But they have to go through a process to which they determine that there is indeed a shortage. And then once they do that, they have to pay a higher minimum wage. For example, in the state of Oregon, it's like over $9 an hour, where the state minimum wage for all workers is $7.50 an hour. They have to provide housing for these workers. It has to be OSHA standard approved. And they have to give American workers or documented workers first right to those jobs. And there's a number of other labor protections. What we're seeing is that under the Bush proposals is that all those labor standards and protections that exist in the current law will be eliminated. And what they really want is to bring in a massive Bracero program where, you know, these workers are brought in by the hundreds of thousands. You know, once the job finishes, then they're deported back to their home country. And in addition to that, they want to keep a percentage of their wages as incentive that these workers would go home and they collect the money back in their home country. The problem is that during the Bracero program, you know, tens of thousands of workers were never paid. In fact, it is my understanding, and I've done, you know, extensive research on the Bracero program, where, you know, nobody got paid. So literally, under that program, I believe there was like over 500,000 contracted workers that have been affected, were never paid. So we have a history of abuse of this program. So why would we be repeating history? We think it's nothing short of legalized slavery. In fact, the guy that ran the program, the Bracero program, Lee J. Williams, in his was quoted in the Dallas Morning News a while back. He called it nothing short of legalized slavery, yeah. And that's what it is.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the rally coming up?
Yes. Well, we call on all people. You know, our friends in labor, our friends in the churches, students, community organizations, and people in general who are concerned with civil liberties, that are concerned with immigrant rights, and are really concerned about the direction that our government is going. You know, both on a statewide level and a national level. Because, you know, we have three Republican candidates that are making the issue of immigrants and immigration part of their agenda. So I think we're, for all those people, we're calling on you to come and support immigrants on March 4th, Saturday, March 4th. We'll start a rally at the Pioneer Courthouse Square in downtown Portland starting at 12 noon. And we'll be marching throughout downtown Portland. Showing our dissatisfaction and protesting the Sensenbrenner bill. you know, during the month of early part of March, the U.S. Senate is going to take debate on this issue. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, we're having this march. This is part of a march that the National Day Labor Organization is coordinating in about 30 different cities throughout the United States. So we call on everybody to come and join us to support workers. The actual name of the march is that we are workers and we deserve rights. So, you know, we call on people to come join us.
All right. And I just want to say something really brief. There was a report that came out just recently about having to do with, well, do you want to explain it?
Yeah, well, there was a report that was published by the Northwest Federation of Community Organizations, which was a collaboration of about 10 different community organizations in Oregon, Idaho, and Washington, where we document the immigrant experiences in the Northwest. We document the plight of immigrants, the exploitation, the discrimination, and we interview 230 immigrants, and we tell in their own words, you know, what it feels to be an immigrant after 9/11 and all the issues that immigrants are facing. And the report, it's really interesting. You can read it at pekun.org. It's a PDF copy there.
I also have it posted on my site, www.chucoradio.com, chucoradio.com. And Ramon, I think we're going to have to leave it right there. For more information, please check out those websites. Ramon, is there a phone number also that people can contact Pekun at?
Yeah, there's a phone number. It's if you want more information on the march, you can call 503-989-0073. Or you can also call VOF, the Labor Education Project here in Portland, who are the people that are coordinating the march locally. So let me give you that number.
Okay.
Hold on a second. It's 233-6787. So for those people that want more information, they can come. They can call VOS at 503-233-6787.
All right.
They can also call Pekun at 503-982-0243, or they can call AFSC here in Portland, which is 230-9427.
Great. Well, on that note, I think I'll let you go, and I want to thank you for coming on the show today to talk about this.
Hey, thanks for having me in your program, and I look forward to be on it. I'd be interested to talk about more, you know, the experiences of Chicanos here in Oregon.
Most definitely.
I happen to live in Oregon since 1970, so I've been active since then. So, you know, I'm really glad to hear that KBU has a new program
and
outreach to that sector of the community.
And I'll definitely have you back on the program, and hopefully next time we're definitely going to make some more time to really let loose.
Okay, hey, thanks a lot for having me on the program.
Right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now I want to remind everybody that the African Film Festival is still going on, and it's going to be going on until the 4th. So get out there and go check out some really, really good movies being directed and produced by Africans, not Americans, Africans. So check that out. And I just want to, next off, we got an interview that I did earlier this week with Moctezuma Esparza. He is the executive producer of a new film called Walkout. It's going to be airing on HBO March 18th. Here it is.
In 1967 and 1968, that led to the birth of the Chicano urban.
Well, let's start off by talking about your latest film, Walkout. It's a true story about the 1968 high school walkouts, which protested the inequalities of the public school system in L.A. Tell us about it.
Yes, Walkout is a true story based on the events that occurred in 1967 and 1968 that led to the birth of the Chicano urban civil rights movement resulted in a student strike in which about 20,000 high school students throughout Southern California shut down L.A. City schools in many, many campuses for over a week, protesting the terrible inequalities of education and the lack of access to a college track preparation and just the really dismal educational prospects for Chicanos back then.
What was life in general, what was it like in East L.A. for a young Chicano during the 60s? I mean, what was the atmosphere like?
Well, you know, it was a great place to grow up. You know, there was a lot of music. There was the Chicano rock and roll sound was really big back then. There was, you know, the growing car culture, and there was a tremendous athletic competitive spirit between the local high schools. But at the same time, almost no one went to college, and there were no professionals that were coming out of the community or the high schools. Nobody was going to college and becoming a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or even teachers. There were very, very few Chicano or Latino or Mexican-American teachers, no one who had any power. There was the police department that was almost exclusively white, the sheriff's department likewise, and it was at the same time that it was a great place to grow up and to live, it was one that felt like was completely cut off from any opportunities to go beyond East L.A. in terms of careers or college or having any kind of civil liberties protected or honored. The police department was as harsh as could be back then, and nobody really cared. The stuff that in later decades outraged the community, you know, the videotape of the beating of Rodney King was a not unusual occurrence in East L.A. That happened on a regular basis. Since there were no Chicano attorneys to speak of, no one who was paying attention to what was happening in the barrio, very little was done.
It seems like there was a group of young conscious youth that were gathering at a coffee house, different organizers that eventually became the Young Citizens for Community Action, which later became the Brown Berets. What was the atmosphere in that coffee house like?
Well, actually, the way that it actually started was that we all met at a youth conference, the Mexican-American Youth Leadership Conference, and Sal Castro was one of the teachers that recruited people to go there. And so kids from Wilson, from Belmont, from Roosevelt, from Lincoln, from Garfield, and from other high schools got to know each other there. This is back in 64, 65, 66. And out of that conference, we formed an organization called Young Citizens Community Action. And that organization then later got a small grant, and we opened up the Piranha Coffee House. That's
okay.
How it happened. And that was our headquarters, that and also an Episcopal church in Lincoln Heights called the Church of the Epiphany, where we used to meet as well. And out of that group was born two organizations. People who were part of Young Citizens for Community Action, some went off to college. I went off to UCLA, and I started UMAS there with a group of other young Chicano students. And I also was part of the group that started the Brown Berets. And both movements came out of Young Citizens for Community Action. So that those two groups, which started in '67, went back to the high schools and became a support system for the kids that were now seniors and had been politicized by the world around them. 1967, 68, all over the world there was youth rising up to change the world. The civil rights movement was in full swing in the United States, the anti-war movement against the war in Vietnam, the feminist movement was beginning to be born, and there were protests that were going on in China and Mexico and France and all over the world. So that same fire was what was going on in East L.A. So we supported the students that were still in high school, and they went through a process that many of us in earlier years had also gone through of doing questionnaires and surveys and finding out what was wrong with the schools and presenting petitions to our local principals and area superintendents and superintendent of schools and the Board of Education, and having the same thing happen to them that had happened to us in earlier years, which was being ignored. And this group of students decided that they weren't going to be ignored, and so we became the support system. When I say we, I mean the students at the few students that were at UCLA, at Cal State LA, Cal State Northridge, USC, Whittier, Occidental, and a couple of other colleges, became the support system along with the Brown Berets to assist them with the walkouts. And that's what happened. The students in March of 1968, after going through the process, becoming frustrated, deciding that they weren't going to be ignored, walked out in mass.
And because of that, some of you were even jailed during that process, and even with some of the protests that happened afterwards, like Sal Castro being fired. What about that?
Well, during the walkouts, the first day, it was peaceful, and there was very little press coverage. In the couple of succeeding days, the police responded with tremendous violence, and many, many people were arrested, and people were, you know, sent to hospital, and these were young kids. These were high school kids. Some were junior high kids who were just exercising the right of freedom of speech, you know, the right to petition the government for redress of grievance, which is the Fourth Amendment and the First Amendment. And the police response was brutal. It was really amazingly brutal and uncalled for. And there was a lot of press who covered it. There was a lot of photographs that were taken and film footage that was taken, none of which was published or broadcast by the local stations. It was all quietly set aside, censored. And the kids, of course, knew that if they kept walking out, that it could get worse. But it actually unified everybody, and the parents in the community and the adults in the labor movement and the church movement were so outraged at the way that we were treated by the police and being ignored that they then joined our protest. And a group was born called the Educational Issues Coordinating Committee that was led by a local Mexicano minister by the name of Ahak Martirosyan, Mexicano born in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And he led the community and brokered a peace with the school board, and the students went back to school. But several months later, we discovered that the school board and the police and the district attorney were still had plans to destroy our movement, and there were grand jury secret indictments with the flimsiest charges that you could imagine, but in the most punitive way. That is, we were charged with conspiracy to commit a misdemeanor, disrupting a public school. Now, if you had been charged with disrupting a public school, that's back then, 68 was a $100 fine, maybe 30 days in jail if you didn't pay the fine. By turning it into a conspiracy, it became a felony And by piling on 15 counts, we were facing 66 years in jail.
Did any part of that have to do with the counterintelligence program at the time?
Well, yes. But the counterintelligence program was just starting in the Chicano community. And, yes, there had been undercover police officers that joined the student movement and joined the Brown Berets. And a lot of the testimony that was used in the grand jury came from them. Yes, absolutely. And the 13 individuals that were indicted were members of UMAS and Brown Berets and the teacher, Sal Castro. And I was one of the 13 indicted along with Sal and fellow Brown Berets and UMAS students. Ultimately, it took 2 years, but the case was dismissed on appeal, pretrial motions, as we never went to trial. And the appellate courts decided that it was an abuse of power and that the indictments were improper, that in fact we had engaged in legitimate, constitutionally protected behavior, protected by the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. But in the meantime, you know, the leadership of the movement was forced to go from pursuing educational justice to pursuing defending ourselves to stay out of jail. And that kind of attack continued. A year later, many of the same people were reindicted on far more serious charges in the Biltmore 6 case. And I was indicted in that case as well. In that case, we were on trial for about 3 years and went through a full jury trial and were ultimately all acquitted or had charges dismissed before it went to the jury. But in that case, we were facing 20 years to life. It was far more serious. And again, it was a result of undercover police testimony and entrapment. The courts ultimately vindicated us.
I'm really glad that you're doing this movie because I feel this information is something that's very underrepresented. I mean, it's not anything that's taught, not that I remember, in public schools, and it's something that makes me feel excited. This kind of information, people need to know about this type of stuff, especially Chicanos, but just American people in general, because this is a piece of American history, not just Chicano history. And
well, Chicano history is American history.
Exactly. And I feel that it's very important that this gets out, and I hope that everybody gets out there and takes a look at this show.
Yes, it will be premiered Saturday, March the 18th on HBO. And we're making efforts to see whether or not we can also put it into theaters and take it across the country. Edward James Olmos directed the movie. He did an incredible job. He was just phenomenal. And alike he and I, who worked on The Ballad of Gregorio Cortez now 25 years ago. That movie was done for television as well, American Playhouse, and it went into theaters and was successful. And that was a movie that Eddie starred in and I produced as well. So we're right now seeing if we can do that as well for this movie. But I certainly encourage everybody to let HBO know that they want to see more of this because it's been very rare. It took almost 6 years to get this movie off the ground after I convinced HBO to develop the screenplay. And I'd been waiting over 20 years to make this film. And this is literally the very first movie ever made about the Chicano urban civil rights struggle. And there have been many, many movies made about civil rights and the struggles of feminists and African Americans and a gay and lesbian community. And this is the very, very first about our community. And it was the largest high school strike in the history of the United States. It was an important event that people have ignored. And it, in fact, it's one of the themes of the movie that if people ignore something, that is, if they pretend it didn't happen.
That was Moctezuma Esparza, Chicano activist and executive director of the movie Walkout. For the remainder of that, you can, I'm going to have that audio posted on my website. It's www.chucoradio.com. That's chucoradio.com. I also want to remind you about the African Film Festival, which is always free. Today's shows are going to be the same ones. They are going to be also going to be playing Friday and Saturday. And I want to remind you to get out and march against the injustices of the Sensenbrenner Bill on immigration on March 4th, Saturday, Pioneer Square. That concludes the show. Thanks for listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.